Bronfman bought the Rossville by Harry Bronfman. He was the biggest bootlegger. He was such a big bootlegger, he had his own distilleries in Canada.
When was that? Was that during probation?
Yeah.
Probation.
And he come down here, and then they eliminated the 18th Amendment. And he, to get rid of his Canadian whiskey, he come down here and bought the Rossville.
Oh.
Yeah, off the Shaughnessy. And then, you see in those other warehouses where they age of whiskey, they have open windows, and they don't heat it. But he went and closed all the windows up and put union heaters in. And I was hooking up, doing the electrical work in them, and they had a federal man in there watching no one stole any of that whiskey because they had to pay the... See, they're not subject to taxes until they take it out of there and sell it.
Yeah.
And they had a revenue man in there watching so no one would steal any of it. And this revenue man said to me, he said, what the hell is he doing here? He's the biggest bootlegger in the United States or in the world, he said. As I remember, I said, well, that's Harry Bronfman. He bought this plant. He didn't say another word. But they would take him to speed up whiskey. They would take in they would have rows of barrels from here to that window, and they made copper tanks like that, about that high and that big around. And they would.
How many gallons would they hold?
Well, that was 55 gallons to a barrel.
But regular barrel size.
Yeah. But they, on these steel, what's called, they put a steam tube in that barrel, and that would stir that whiskey up in there and agitate it in there, and that tube there would take care of the expansion, you know, would increase the size of the water. And that would also char color.
Yeah, stir it around.
I tell you a good one. See, when the old O'Shaughnessy's own, the old Rossville, they had down there where the present Seaman bottling plant is, they used to take the corn down there after they would ferment it, you know, and they'd put yeast in it to start develop the alcohol, see? But anyway, they had about six big tanks, and those tanks were about from here to that ceiling there. And there was a gas came off of those tanks, and if a bird flew over it and was too close, it suffocated and would drop right in. And you see, and they would be rats would get up there, and it would kill them, and they'd go to take a copper cup and had a real fine jar of screen. They'd suck it in there and then be dead rats and birds out there in the center, and they'd drink that sour beer before they let it to the beer still.
I know I went to up there to Seagram's, and they were saying about the fumes. If you take your hands in there, just pull a little air from your face, it'd take your breath away.
Oh, yeah. But Harry Bronfman, see, getting back to the story about the bottling plant, he converted that their old barrel shop, the Shaughnessy's, into a bottling plant.
Yeah.
He made up, and it was a bottling line, had a big white belt about that wide, and I imagine that belt was about 200 feet long. And each woman, there was 42 women on the line, and each one had a certain thing to do, and then they'd do that and put it on the belt, and the next person do something else.
They put the seals on and all that sort of thing.
But anyway, he only had two lines, and then he wanted to increase it. And he says, he wants four more lines, and I says, okay. So I had to build a new entrance equipment, you know, to accommodate the additional load. So, I built the new bank, new transformer, the new entrance equipment, and I told him, I said, now I'm going to turn the power off at 12 o'clock and I'll have it back on at 1 for you. And he says, all right. So about 10 minutes after 1, I planned exactly what I was supposed to do, and about quarter after one, Harry Bronfman comes to me and he says, "Who's going to pay for that whiskey one down the creek?" And I said, "What whiskey?" And he says, "Go down there and see and hear Pete Osborne. He's laying down on the concrete floor and paddling in that whiskey." And he says, "Oh, he did want to swim in whiskey." And he's certainly going down that floor drain, Steve.
But where's the whiskey come from?
Well, you see, the most motors are controlled by a magnetic stroller.
They kick
the power off and they cut out. This was a hand switch, and it was this Canadian whiskey. No problem. He says, "I don't give a damn about the whiskey. It's the tax I had to pay on me getting in the country."
And it was all this time is all you. Over noon hour, it was running out. Right? It kept pumping.
Well, the pump was running continuously all during noon hour.
Oh,
pumping this Canadian whiskey out. See, that's the only way he could get rid of his Canadian whiskey was to blend it with our raw whiskey, and then he got rid of it. He was the richest man on the North American continent.
No, completely. Oh, tell me about the wheelworks again.
Huh?
I didn't have that on. Tell me about the wheelworks. How big was the wheels behind her?
Well, I would say they were about 5 feet.
About 5 feet in diameter.
It is about that high.
And they had a hub, what, foot or bigger?
About a 14-inch hub, diameter hub.
Yeah.
And it had the tires on it was 1/2 inch by 3.
A 1/2 inch steel with
3 and 1/2 inches.
About 3 inches wide.
And the spokes was about 3 inches in diameter.
Each spoke in it.
Yeah.
Well, did they make anything else besides wheels for cans?
They made,
that probably
they made about, let's see. No, I think it was about, I don't think it made, I was trying to think of the Second World War. I mean, that was the first world war.
Yeah.
They did something there, too, in the Second World War in that building.
Did it?
Oh, yeah.
What come in there next? Fiber reed?
Let's see.
Is there anything in between there?
First was the match factory there.
I heard that once.
And then boom. Then they built the Royal Wheel Company. And I know Mr. Funky used to sharpen our ice skates, and he would take them and put them on a real fine grit grinder, and he would cut a hollow. And you ate
hologram.
Boy, you could really cut the ice with that.
Uh-huh.
And he would do it for this kid, you know.
Yeah.
He was a maintenance man. Mr. Funky. And then they closed the wheel company.
Was there anything?
And then Fred Martin.
Yeah, but the fiber reed was there first. You know, they made this reed furniture.
Cane furniture.
Yeah.
And then Fred Martin Company, he had a box plant up in Toledo on the city dump up there, and he come down here and bought the factory and opened up a car dealer shop. And
the 37 flood got him, but
yeah. But you know, the 37 flood got him, but he wasn't hurt as bad as lots of people thought. Stedman's foundry, I did all the electrical work, see. And Karen Langdon and Chester Peebles going to the boat club. And Karen said to me, he said, "Bud, they had right around 3 feet of water in that plant. Most of the motor set on the concrete floor." Yeah. And Karen said to me, says, "Think you can get us started?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." So the first thing I did, the water wasn't even on the stand yet. I went and rented a farmer's tractor, gasoline tractor. Then I went to Indianapolis and got a DC compound wound loader, 30 horsepower. You can tell a DC compound wound motor generates electricity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a generator does. And they had DC current out there, 220 volt DC current. So as soon as the water left the floor, we took a high pressure pump and washed out the fields. The water came up on the generators up halfway on the crankshaft. And we washed the little mud out. And then I took, I had six oil drums. They had two generators, took a pick and poked holes in it, put a poke in it, set it fire, and had a high pressure pan do it, drag the windings out.
Yeah.
And we were there working, and we had to take each motor and take it apart and scrub it out and get it. And Chester Peeble said he had a friend in Cincinnati had a motor rewind shop. And I says, yes, and he's got other friends too. I said, you better send them motors to Indianapolis. He says, well, I guess you're right, bud. Kent took them out. We washed them all out. Baked them. 2 weeks after water left that floor, it was pouring on.
Yeah, I remember over the box factory, they had them big rolls.
They burst it.
Yeah, they had them tapered up, and then they swelled up and busted. Well, this pile that's up in the air, that got them rolls, and they knocked the wall out of it.
Kearns had, he had a friend in the city that we had, they were in a wealthy family, Kearns Langdon was. So
oh, yeah.
One of his friends in the city wasn't in the flood area. They sent their chief engineer down. And he come around and introduced himself to me, and he talked to him. The next day, he come around a second time, talked to me a little bit. Third day, I missed him, and I said, I don't know, it was Karen or Chester. I said, what happened to so-and-so? He said, hell, I don't have to tell that boy what to do. He knows what to do. He said, I better go take care of my own business.
Just tell me about the brick factory. How were they? There was one there, that one over there by the
forks. Is that?
Yeah, no.
Who owned that? Well, who started that out?
It wasn't Colt.
I can't think of his name. Dad, Will Weber bought it, but half interest, and my father owned the other half.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. We made 22,000 brick a day, and we'd start out at 6:30 in the morning, and if we made the 22,000 brick, we'd day's work done. Sometimes we'd get done at 1:30. We didn't take dinner off. If the engine broke down, we'd work to 5 o'clock. We got so much in on.
And then how'd you dry them? Do you have a rack or something?
They had what they call a Georgie buggy. It had wheels on it about that high, and it just had two befores, and then they had what they call a pallet. And they had two dump carts, and they had two horses, of course, and they would go down close to the creek and shovel that clay in, and then they would bring it up to a place where they could dump it into a car, and this car would pull it up into the plant with a cable, see? And then they would tip it sideways and dump it into the pub mill. And this pub mill, then, they'd mix water with it, and it'd be real stiff.
And was those rollers in there?
No, it was just a worm.
Oh, a worm.
Worm in there, and just kept a turning, and turning, gets so damn stiff that you couldn't hardly press it. Then this here would drop in, and then they had a press, and it would be, they call it a hole. And it was about that long, and there was five brick in there. And this here pressed in there, and then when it would shove it out of the machine, it would clean it off. And then the dumper, he would take and pick that up. He had muscles in his shoulders like your horse's thigh. And he'd pick up that little pallet and turn around and put it on this thing and tip it down so it would be level, and it would vibrate. And the brick mud would drop right out of it. And then they'd be on the pallet, and they would put five pilots on one of these Georgie bogies, and they had about five Georgie bogies, and they would go and take them out into the rack. And they had it just had a short shed over about 5 foot, 5 or 6 foot bed, so they could put pilots on each side of them.
Yeah.
And it just settled it dry. It was to be real dry. And
they didn't have any roof on it, huh?
Yeah, it had a roof on it. Oh. It's rain. But the sun and the wind would dry it. And then they would take these brick together up, and they had little mules. They had two wagons. And they would take them, pull them up out of the rack, out the pallet, put them on there, and then they would take it to the kiln where they burn it. They would take it and pile these bricks in and leave about a crack in between the brick and kind of offset them so that the heat would, and then they had what they call those areas.
They drew them to the kiln after the sun dried the air.
Yeah, the sun dries it with the air. Take it about a week, unless it's real hot weather. And then they pile them in there and then leave the airspace in between. And then they would use smokeless coal. And they would shovel that coal in there, and just like a big, well, it was red in there. Just the whole thing was red. And then the brick was left what they close to the fire guy. They would be so hard you could take them, hit them together, and they'd ring like a bell. They call them, I forget they had a name for those bricks.
Did they put a name on them over there? Oh, it was a Roar brick.
Roar.
Or that's where the Roar bricks are.
Yeah. And the Soar brothers had one up there in Orangeburg. And
yeah.
The Mitchell Brick Company had one up at Sailor Park.
They told us, we had the daughter of the fellow talked to us one time. They said they would put brick on barges and take them up to Cincinnati. They said the Albee Theater had some of their brick. They tore that down now.
When they built the Palace Theater in Aurora, Dad and Bill Weber had a bet. It wasn't very much money. Who was the closest one to figure out how many bricks to take to build that building? And Dad was the closest. Dad didn't have much of an education, but he was good as
he knew what he had.
He was a damn good businessman, too.
Before the palace was there, that's where old Kuhlmeier.
Yeah, Kuhlmeier was in there.
Had the fireworks and that's kind of fire. And somebody got them on fire, and the whole place burned down.
And then for the library, I remember that there was fire.
Yeah. I can just remember Kuhlmeier being there. That must have been
down at the Wooden Shoe. That was a furniture factory, see.
Yeah.
And they did bedroom suits and I don't know, now they can make chairs. They might do the match up. They made tables too, if I remember. And Dad had stock in it, and he was in charge of they called it the dop shop. And of course, my grandmother started the store in Aurora, and she got old, and Dad quit down there. And in 1915, he had stock, and the reason why they called it the Wooden Shoe, because there were so many Dutch people down there that actually wore wooden shoes and worked in.
They must have lived up, that's why they call it that child. Most of them lived up in there. That was a separate company from Indianapolis Chair.
Indianapolis Chair, who was it?
Bill Newcomb.
Newcomb married Newcomb's daughter. Who was that there surveyor that married Newcomb's daughter?
Who was?
Oh, Tommy Dartnell. He came from the foundation company to build the Columbia Power Plant.
Oh, did he?
I used to ride the train with him.
Oh, kind of, see.
And he's the one that told me what size steel to use when I built that building down there.
Well,
he figured out what size steel.
Uh-huh.
And Tommy and I struck it off pretty good. It cost, I don't know, it only cost 6 cents a ride from the streetcar to Orangeburg.
Oh, did it?
6 cents an hour.
How much go to Cincinnati? You know that?
It cost on a train. I went to school up there, the High Mechanics Institute.
Yeah.
It cost 26 cents a ride.
On the train?
Train, yeah. I bought a 60-ride ticket.
Oh, yeah.
And if you didn't want to go to use it, you'd loan it to a friend. He'd go to the city and go to the show for it.
And I know, I rode that for a while, and you could get a, that time, it's $9, a little less than $10. $9.75 or something for a 60-ride.
Yeah.
And then Frank Martin's daughter, she wrote it. She told me that then they raised it to $11.15, and she said she was only making $15 a week, so 1 week she had $3.75 to eat on already. Where'd that streetcar go out to Greendale today?
Was that... It's on the side of the road.
Park. Yeah.
Finally, yeah. Went up there and then in Hardintown, and then it went to up along the US 50 road to Anderson Ferry. Then you got on Cincinnati Street Railway System. That's on the street.
You had the transfer there?
Yeah. They come down as far as the bridge, and they were supposed to have that bridge designed to accommodate streetcar. But after they built it, that bridge was built in 1878. And originally before that bridge, they had a covered, wood covered bridge.
Yeah,
there.
I've heard that.
And I used to walk that bridge all the time.
Did it fall down the creek? I heard one story, some bridge fell down the creek.
The Super Bowl, let's see, LeClean Steel. No, is it LeClean? I don't know. I kind of forget the name of this here steel company. They're in St. Louis. And they built, they come up there to recondition the bridge. And they had a flagman on each end. And they carry a red cloth back and forth, you know, to control the traffic.
Yeah.
And they rented my agriculture. And I said to them, I said, how'd you like to eliminate those two men? And they said, well, what are you going to do? You can't let them run together out there. And I says, I've got some old traffic lights. I used to take care of the traffic lights in this area on the state. I put 8 lights in at one time down in Madison, I remember. Out of North Running to put one in. And Decker took care of the launch vehicle lights. But anyway, I said, I'll put a traffic light up on each end of the bridge. He says, I don't think it'll work. And I says, I'll tell you what it'll cost you. If it don't work, you don't pay me. And he said, well, that's fair enough deal. And when I had those lights, it go on one of the top officials out of the steel companies out of St. Louis come up and thank me for doing it. Now it's standard practice.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of
people. Even doing it on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. The Army, remember when the Army, World War II started, the Army was going to come through and got to the bridge? And they said,
they guarded the bridges. The railroad bridges,
they did. Well, they couldn't. They had tanks and everything. They couldn't cross the bridge. They sat there for 3 days. I don't know where they went. They finally left. And it was just a matter of months or two, they started surveying for a new road. That's when they started surveying for the new bridge up where it is now.
Oh.
But they're supposed to.
You know, on that bridge, that walk on the upper side?
Yeah.
When they built the farms, you know, for that walkway, we inserted steel clip things. And all you do, it would be better than the cement. And you know, if one face would be exposed, you take a square-headed bolt and shove it up in and then shove it in the slot. And then you can hang a rod down, all thread rod or whatever length rod you want to, or a bolt. And we put on a swingy scaffold, we put three-inch steel conduits in underneath that wall for office. And I said, Riz Hamill, John Brooks and I was working on that scaffold, and those damn conduits, that big around, was heavy. And I said to office, I said, why can't we use fiber duct? He says, yes, and the boys will be shooting through the duct and my cables, too. He said, no, you have to put steel in, he said. But you know, I used to go to him. He was a professor, taught electrical engineering at the
college. Oh, he's a smart man, yeah.
And he called me up one day and he says, come over, Brad, I want to talk to you. I went over there and he handed me a blueprint. He says, here, take care of the electrical work and the new telephone exchange I'm building in Lawrenceburg. Didn't ask a price or anything else. Just had that much confidence in me. I'd go to him and he'd tell me, you know, different things about what I didn't understand.
Was there any phone here? Any telephone here when he first came?
I think he changed over to the it used to be that he had a crank.
Yeah.
Had a magneto. We had a telephone in our store, see? And Dad would go back and had a crank. You had to crank it. He'd ring different customers, and they'd give him the order. And then one of us boys would walk and go up 4th Street and up and come back down Sunnyside and Chip Town and make a list of orders. And we would put those orders up and get them to the people for the wintertime.
Now,
we have three horses, Dan, Mark, and Ella. And we go to Rising Sun every Thursday. We start out at 5 o'clock and we load up the wagon. Yellow was a horse. Dan had quite a bit of horse race blood in it. That Jacob was up the fairgrounds and he let Ben Schrader, who already drove it, either got a prize, but Dad just wasn't. But he loved those horses. They had one horse, the old Ron. It was so old, it couldn't move around, and Dad went to school like these. He thought so much of those horses. And we had and when we'd have a flood, we had a white door in our grocery store, and when the water would come up, we'd go around with the boat and take the groceries off the shelf as the river rose. We wouldn't take off any more. We had from the stop fire, we'd take a hose and wash out the store and start to start the top belly stove. And dry it out.
Where was your store? That was right there on Gordon Street, right?
Yeah.
On the corner there?
On the corner. Opposite of the corner was Pelton's, but Kenneth Slew, and then they had a hotel there, Sunnyside Hotel, on Johnson Street.
Up there they call Chip Town. That used to be an old Miller's. Didn't it? Saw Miller's.
Yeah.
Where'd you get the name of Chip Town?
The sawmill was. You know where the Phillips 66 station is now?
Yeah.
Right down towards the B&O railroad track. There was a building there. And the walls is at least 2.5 foot thick. Still full of sawdust. They would saw the ice off of the ball diamonds. The present marina used to call that the ice ponds. Freeze ice there and store it in there for the Crescent Brewery.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, we used to play in there. The walls is all rotted out. The sawdust is coming out. Let's get to play in there.
They must have had colder winters than they have now. We don't hardly have creeks frozen. Froze over very much now.
Well, no, we don't. Near the ice skate.
Well, you remember that when the river 1918 then, didn't you?
Yeah, there was a hunk of ice I don't remember what street it was on, but that hunk of ice floated in there on one of our main streets, and it was in May before they would chop at it with picks, axes. It was May before that ice melted off that street.
When was that? January when the house froze.
Zero weather for I don't know how many months. It was so damn cold that they even closed the schools.
Yeah, they said that they could even drive.
Well, you know, you cross the railroad track there, I think it's the Durban Auto Parts, isn't it?
It's something else now.
The Shurers built that. I'm pretty sure that the Shurers built that.
You mean there were, one time is a trans factory there.
That was in a separate brick building. It was an alley, the
trans
factory.
Burton ran there for a while, too.
Burton came to go afterwards. Burton bought out the Shurers.
Yeah.
But I don't know who it was that built that building where that auto parts is. That wasn't the building. They didn't make pants in that building.
That was a garage, I think.
They built it, and they used to auction tobacco in there.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. And then they would pack it in great big hogs heads. Had a press in there. But the Shurers, there was an alley in there, and then Shurers built the building because he had shack trucks. So he had two shack trucks because they hauled it, they got it off the flat car over there to B&O Depot, and they got it over there, and they brought it, and a new tug mill, they called it. That was for the brickyard, and they hauled it over there, and when they, I can remember when they put the brick streets down, on a Sunday, this contractor, road contractor, bought lots of pork, help.
Yeah.
On a Sunday, and they were going to stay in the old West House down there on the river, next to the Big Bull River track. And the local fellas stoned them out of the house. They all run up the track, and the police come over and got them settled. And I don't know how they settled that, but anyway, those bricks, they graded it off.
Were they set on concrete or anything?
Yeah, they graded the road, and they put about 4 or 6 inches of concrete and about 2 inches of sand, and then set those brick on the sand, and the man had his legs cut off right here, and he had big leather knee pads. His arms looked like a fella's thigh. Just wrestled top right off. He grabbed each one of them big bricks like that, put them in just like that. And they kept a couple fellas busy there getting the brick. And after they replaced those brick, they made a slurry out of cement and water and braced it in the cracks. Those bricks are, have you ever seen one of them?
I have never.
They're about that wide and that tall and about that long.
Yeah.
They call them paving bricks. They brought them in the rail.
That must have been kind of like when they talked about the Gibson building down there. That
coconut cream pie, will you?
What, coconut cream pie?
Yeah.
Gibson building, when they building that, some guys went on a strike, and then they brought some black fellas down. And then to work on it, and they threw bricks over that. and run them out of town. I always heard that's where they heard that.
I don't know about that.
That the colored fella couldn't stay overnight in Aurora after that.
Yeah. Aurora was noted for that. Niggers in Cincinnati. Oh, yes, that's a town they don't allow the colored people.
Well, that's where I heard that started, because they come in here to work, and they started that. They said they had a fence around there, and they began throwing bricks over top of the fence, and they thought black fellas come out of there. They wasn't going to work with that.
You know, the Cobb family, you remember where Chuck got his store?
Yeah.
The, let's see, the Cobb family must have planned it, built that building, but they must change the brickwork on it. Someone did, I don't know who did it, but it used to be an old soft brick building, painted red.
Oh, and it burned. I had a fire there.
Uh-huh. And you know, you got to give Chuck credit for what he's done.
Oh, yeah. Done a lot of good.
But you know, the Cobb family come here in 1840, and they owned the hill from the Sunnyside Avenue over to the next hollow to the next hill.
Mm.
They owned that whole hill. They also had a little iron mill down on the riverbank. We were the second person to build a house up there beside Paul Road built first, and we were second. Of course, the Cobb family had their house up there.
Yeah.
They owned that whole hill.
That's where Speckman, his house. Well, that wasn't the same as Mac Cobb. That's a different Cobb, isn't it? You know, Mac Cobb.
I don't know if he's any relation to
him. Somebody told me that his folks used to have a printing, I don't know, was it a paper or printing shop?
Yeah.
And they said Mac could set type for him. He could set type. He wasn't no dummy. They just teased him too much. But when he passed the Saturday Evening Post, I'd ask him what's in it. Boy, he could just read all them headings off just like a professor.
You know, on a Saturday night, people would come with their horses and buggies, and some of them had automobiles, park them on 2nd Street, Main Street, and they would go home and get something to eat and come back to visit with people.
Yeah, they'd sit there just to talk with people and visit. Now, Saturday's a dead time. Everybody more on Friday now, but Saturday there's not much anything going.
The house that I was born in on George Street there, that house was built in 1840.
Did your dad build that?
No, this doctor had someone to build it. That house has got 5 bedrooms in it.
Yeah.
And it had a stairway up to one part of that second floor, and then it had another stairway went up to the back, kind of a storage room. And it's got a pipe at the front door that you can walk through this pipe into anybody in the dining room. And then it's also got a knob you pull on this here, a personal knob. You pull on that knob, it would then pull a wire. That wire went to the ceiling, went across the ceiling into the dining room and rang bells. And then that
over
had. And then it also had one at the bottom of the steps and rang the bells up in the hallway.
So who built it then?
I don't know who built it, because they built in 1840.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And who did you say it was, a doctor?
Dr. Bond, B-O-N-D. Mm. It's in the Dearborn County Historical
Building. Yeah, I'll have to look that up sometime.
And it's got a tree, I'm pretty sure they planted it. It's got coffee beans. Did you ever see a coffee bean tree? It's got pods about that long. and it's got beans in there, about bigger, a little bit bigger than your thumbnail. And they said that the early settlers would look for them and bake them and make coffee out of them.
Yeah.
And they said the wood wouldn't burn. The wood wouldn't burn. So I thought, hell, the wood won't burn. So I took a piece of it and put it in the fireplace. It would glow, but it wouldn't come to flame.
Oh, bitter.
And they say that the early settlers would look for those trees, and they made what they called a shake, or shingles. They wouldn't burn.
Oh, bitter.
And another man told me the same thing.
The first time I heard that.
I got it. We got a tree up there now.
Yeah, we
got pots about that.
You mean
long.
Up where you live now?
Yeah, up on the hill.
Did you take it from down there?
No, it was cop planted. Cop planted.
Oh, already up there.
Yeah,
that's. They always call that Cobb's Hill. Or Sutton's Hill over there. Do you remember him? When was old Doc Sutton live? That's been.
He lived up there. George Sutton. The Suttons lived on, Third Street. Sutton, he had the building.
Yeah, that's where the doctor's office was, I guess.
Yeah. And George Sutton, he built a house up on the hill, and the war broke out. And I was wondering, World War broke out. And I said, well, we're in a war, and it's all they're just shaking the rattle on their sabers, that's what he said. And he was, too.
Yeah, they were really rattling, wasn't it?
Rattle their sabers, he said.
Do you remember that?
Always.
I don't remember. Well, they said they got the Lutheran preacher out and made him kiss the flag over there.
I remember that, but I don't know.
I don't know who all was
the details on it.
All the guys, but there was a mob of people. They thought he was pro-German. He's for the Germans, so they got him out.
I tell you a good one. The man of Ungers, what was the name of that truck, Brewery, down along the collar?
Crescent?
Crescent Brewery.
Yeah.
He was a very wealthy man. And when he died, his wife burned all of his clothes and destroyed all of his items. He died in a whorehouse.
Oh, they did.
And she found out about it and where he died, and she was mad at him, and she just destroyed all of his clothes.
Can you remember when that operated, Bud?
Oh, no.
I don't know when that stopped.
There used to be a big ice compressor machine up there in the building. We used to fly, it had a flywheel about 18 foot diameter.
Yeah.
And we used to play on that, climb around on that wheel. It was in there, but they tore it out to get the
air. Right back in that hill, son.
Back in the hill. That's the reason why there were stone arches. On account of that constant temperature. Ground temperature around 55 degrees.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be worrying about heat and cooling and heat and cooling. And that way they can control the carbon and the alcohol.
Yeah. I read there in a book where Gaff and some of them decided that they had a business where they sell malt and all that stuff to distilleries. But it didn't last very long. They was only in business a little over a year, and it wasn't going very good, so they shut it down.
Now, you know that they're going to call for the Roar Supply coming to the building?
On the cross street.
That used to be a distillery there.
Yeah.
And that building that the Roar Supplies in was one time I think it was a buggy work. Yeah, they made buggies in there.
Oh, did they?
And then they came to town and they put a chair factory in there.
Lucum and Hoskins.
Yeah. They had a chair factory in there.
I guess I don't know why they call it Indianapolis. I think those fellas came from around Indianapolis.
Well, Newcomb did.
Yeah.
Newcomb.
Was the next building up where the old commercial club and all that. Was that an office? Somebody one time told me that was an office for the.
You mean the next block toward the railroad?
Well, the one that's towards tore down now for the bank. You know, they had the where the Bolton all that was in there for a long while. Bolton printed newspaper. Some, and then they had the upstairs the Chamber of Commerce, or it used to be the Commercial Club.
Commercial Club?
It was upstairs. They had bowling alleys and pool tables.
I'm trying to figure out. I remember the Commercial Club.
Uh-huh. That was upstairs over there. And then the Bolton newspaper was downstairs. And someone...
KSC's had a club up there, too.
Yeah. And someone told me one time they thought that was the office for the stores when they was here. It looked like a newer building. Well, I can remember the old train that come in down there by the river. It was a...
Jerkwater?
Yeah. This one was half for a freight or something, and the other half was passenger. It was half and half.
You mean, we call that the Jerkwater?
Yeah.
That.
And it had an old water cooler there, on there. And
we used to take nails, lay them across like that on a rail, and the car would run over them, and they'd squeak to the end, and it looked like a pair of scissors.
Yeah. Well, I've done that, too. I did it. I was up in Lawrenceburg when that last train, passenger train, came through. And somebody, old Wyatt up there, had a bunch of, he had about 8 or 10 pennies. He put them on a track, and he gave me one. I don't know what I ever did with it. Then there was remember when the bag of money got cut in two up there by the depot? They had
dollar bills were flying in the air.
Yeah, they had
the mailbag cut.
Mailbag didn't pick it up and knocked it down on the wheels and had it cut in two and all them. And old Purnell, they said he was up there on the Aylard Myers building fixing the roof on that building in back. And he looked out there and saw all the bills were flying up in the air, and they said he practically fell down the ladder coming down so quick. And he said it took him so damn long to get down that ladder every day. He didn't get much money. But they said he practically fell down there.
You know, they had a joke out in Lawrenceburg that Tanner's business stung so that the old Honey Bobrink had cattle, and he put that slop to the distillery, the old Rockville distillery.
Yeah.
And they would walk around about a foot and a half of crap. Cow crap and that old slop, and it stunk like hell. And there used to be a walk bridge from that side of the creek to this side, and it was about 4 feet wide. And then he also had a 4-inch pipe that pumped that slop over there to his tank, see, when he fed the cattle. Really stank there. And old Heine said, he says, as you go down and water Sophie's house, that's Sophie's house over here. And he said, now you do a good job for Sophie. And I said, okay, I was doing this electrical work there. See, that's the pumps. And we went in there. Instead of using wood joists, like, you know, you ordinarily do, they got logs. And two of those logs were wrong.
Or
the house
over there. Yeah, a lot of good lumber put around the houses. What toll road was that they charged a penny for, Bud?
This road here?
From Aurora to Lawrenceburg? There's some girl got a house out there on Conwell Street, and right there by that little store. And she said that on her deed, it said that that was a toll house there. You go to Roar to Cochran one time. Cochran was they had quite a bit of... Quite a bit of business.
Well,
and they had
the railroad shops out there.
The railroad shops, they had the chair factory. And,
yeah.
The railroad... rear of the roundhouse, I went into Stedman's foundry and moved out there.
Now, Stedman's used to be right, you know where those apartment houses are across from the B&O Depot?
Yeah.
They had, that was a machine shop, and the foundries over there were the this side of the B&O Depot.
Yeah.
The foundries on that side. Then they had the copper shop, you know, down below there, along in there, too.
Who'd the copper shop make most of their barrels for? Was there any distilleries here? That?
Yeah, you had Greendale, Squibbs, and Rossville in Orangeburg. And then we had the one in Aurora, across from Aurora Supply. And that was a brewery down on Fetch Hollow.
What was there where the old, where the post office is now? That was a little chair factory or something.
Where the post office is now?
Yeah, there was a brick building there. They used to
see where the brick building was.
It's on 3rd Street there.
Yeah. I can't remember what was it.
But look. It was a brick building, and I think someone told me they made some kind of furniture in there.
You wouldn't let some happen?
No.
I don't remember that.
But one time, what was it? They said there's something like 22 saloons in Aurora.
I wouldn't doubt it.
that was an essential part of the town, wasn't it? Granddad, sea metal. That's before my time. They said he had there where the bowling alley was and where the plumber is now, right across from the post office. And the old timers, the old beer drinkers said if they'd go in there and stub their toe, he wouldn't sell them anymore. They didn't like that. He wouldn't sell them if he thought they'd get too much.
When I was a little bitty part, my dad, he'd buy about 2 railroad cars of potatoes every late in the fall. And I know if the railroad wasn't opened up yet, well, Dad would set me up on the bar and give me a little glass of beer. And then when the railroad men come, right, then we get them to break the seal or open up the car, and they always shipped those potatoes, and they always said it had a little homemade corn, a little pot, and they burnt coke in it, charcoal, and they sent a man with that car to keep the potatoes from being under the freeze. Dad would let me go back into the corners of the car and get samples of potatoes to see if they wasn't closed. If it was okay, then we'd go to the bank and get a check or pay them, then we could start unloading.
What would you do with that many potatoes?
We sold it to other groceries.
Oh, they did.
That was a good business.
That's what he's thinking about.
Teenies used to do that, too. They used to sell smaller
Cliff Bills. Once in a while, Dad would split a car with Cliff Bills. He had a hay barn down there for the old Long Bridge.
I always heard a story about that. It said somebody called up and said they wanted 10 bales of hay. And Dill said, well, who's the hay for? And the guy says, well, the hay, Mr. Dill, that's for the horse. Did they rent out? Anybody down here have horses to rent or stables?
Yeah, they had horses, and then young people would go rent them, take their girlfriends to ride.
They always talk about Fitz up there in Orangeburg having such nice white horses. I've seen pictures of them.
Fitz owned an apartment there, you know, where at the end of the main street up there, and he had a little building, and course, I was only 16 years old. My brother-in-law, Hank Loberding, you know, they owned a Cornell brewery, and when they made it in London, they stopped making beer, but they continued to make ice. And I was about 16 years old. It cost 6 cents for a ride to the Royal Warrington on the streetcar. And I was going up these steps, and the steps were worn real thin. And I had a 100-pound cake of ice on my shoulder, and the step broke. And I shoved it off my shoulder, and every time I hit a step, it broke the step, and I went out through the screen door. Old Fitch came out and started raising hell with me, and I says, "You've got a hell of a lot to nerve. Those steps are what if I fell and got hurt?" He didn't say another word. But every time it hit a step, it broke that damn step and rolled right out through the screen door.
Well, that was probably a gravel road to Lawrenceburg then, wasn't it?
I can remember years ago.
It was just rock and gravel. Yeah. And then you had to go through that little old ridge there at Wilson Creek. I don't think two cars could pass on it. Too narrow. And the one side was for the streetcar. The streetcar had a bridge there.
6 cents a ride. This right here where this building is built used to be an old barn ready to fall down. Old Heine Bobling owned it, see?
Yeah.
We'd come up here and shoot pigeons. He couldn't see, and he said, "You're not shooting my pigeons." Then, "No, we're shooting sparrows." He was You know that there's an underground river right underneath this building?
Yeah. Is that where they're getting their city water? Is that the same river?
Same, this underground river, right down here about 1,000 feet, the three wells. And I was involved with all of them. We took a crane and set the steel, we put the motor up high out of the water, high water. And the last one, the third well, they got down a big auger and cut out a hole. They went down 104 feet, and then you hit water.
Mm.
And we lowered a casing, then we lowered a 100 horsepower motor and pumped right down in the water.
The
third well. And then they said, "I don't know if I'd be interested in tying the new, the last well in with the other two." And we had a crane, so we had a drag bucket. And it's about that wide, and it was too wide to cut, you know, just to put a pipe in. So I found out that the garbage man now, he had, someone told me he had one. I called him up, and I said, "Only about this wide, see?" He said, "Yeah, he'd sell it to me." I went up there to get it. His house was on a dump, and the steps are so damn thin that I was afraid to go up. I brought it down here. But he's a multi-millionaire now. He owns this building right here.
Is it? Talking about the streetcar, how often did that run when it was
every
run?
Hour.
Oh, did it?
I think the first one left the roar at 6:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the end of the bridge, our Japs sold the tickets and had a restaurant. And they also used to make, and Mrs. Billingsley took it over, and she used to make her ice cream cones, roll them, and
they were
good, weren't they?
Yeah. And their ice cream was good, too. Did they make their own ice cream?
I don't know if they did. I think they used Richmond's ice cream or else French Bar. I don't know which.
It was good. Old Nittenberg, he used to make it. You'd get a
7 cent Sunday.
7 cent Sunday, and then if you want a chocolate marshmallow nut Sunday with a cherry on it, it was 11 cents. Heck, if you had a quarter, that's all you need to go to the show. 15 cents.
15 cents, you go to the show, bottle pop, and bag a sack of corn, and the ticket. 15 cents.
Oh, yes. What was his name? Jake Trulock.
Jake.
How much was it? Nickel a bag?
Yeah. Ralph Trulock was his brother.
Yeah.
He had the air dome. It used to be the air dome there where.
Then the folks built a building there on Main Street there, you know, right by the Roar Utilities. Big building. And then
that was the air dome, was?
Yeah. They had an air dome in there. They also had one down there where that building's still there on Main Street, below between 2nd and the riverfront, going down on the left-hand side. Fellow that owned the little liquor barrel house, they called it. What was his name? He was worth quite a bit of money.
I don't remember that.
That was an air dome at one time, and he built that wasn't a Leary. That was a
Grand.
Grand Theater. Yeah, he built the
Grand. Did it say air dome? Did it have a roof on it?
No, it didn't have no roof. It was an air dome first, and then he went and built a...
But it had a fence around it or something.
Just a fence around it. Rain, if it rained, why, they'd give you a rain check, and you'd come back in.
No, did it?